Blog Talk Radio.
Month of January. Actually, it's like this month is going by kind of quick. Actually, 2021 is flying away kind of quick, but that's okay. The faster we get through February, move on through March, the cold weather is just aside. I'm Mark Elliott. As you know by now, we get together at least once a week, myself and two other gentlemen, and we do something called One Black Man Talk. It's basically 90 minutes of a pocket of talk that will explore the male's perspective on love, life, and relationships. We don't shy away from some things need to be said. Always shoot for honest self-evaluation. And this evening, we're going to have a guest in a little bit. I'm going to keep that as a secret for now. But we're going to be joined by a guest that hasn't been on here for maybe about, about 18 months. And we took last week off. I'm not going to say why, but maybe we just need a chance to kind of recoup, recharge, and we're back. And we're ready to go strong. I know this cat here is ready to go strong. If I'm talking about the cold in Connecticut, I can only imagine how cold it is in Illinois. That's how you feeling, Mr. Deep Reese?
Man, I feel like a bear hibernating because I'm not going outside. I'm not doing anything that has to do with outdoors, man. Just been laying in a warm bed under heaters and comforters and all that, man, trying to stay warm, bro. That's the report from Chicago.
It's that time of the year, baby. And, you know, you always hear this before in the sports show. It's a certain time of the year that this brings out what you call it, the big time of the year. When this time of the year comes, he really says, "What time of the year, my brother? Don't be shy. What
big
time
girl
of the year
season.
Is it?"
Big girl season, yeah.
Oh, that always get me to laugh, man. That always get me to laugh.
Yeah, that was told to me when I first stepped across the state line. This is the season right here in Chicago.
As I said earlier, we took a week off last week, man. Had a chance to kind of relax a little bit, kind of refresh our thoughts. A little time off, man. How did your past week and a half go, Shaz?
Didn't really enjoy last Sunday. We could have done the show last Sunday, if you ask me. but didn't watch much of the Super Bowl because didn't like the result, didn't like the way the game was going. You can call it what you want, but it was a time for me to, you know, have some food and kind of relax a little bit and enjoy some movies and cartoons. So. But, man, that Super Bowl was I don't know. It's almost like it wasn't a Super Bowl to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It wasn't much to kind of partake in. I think I was good to about halftime, and after that, man, I went start watching the Honeymooners. It just didn't seem like the game was going to pick up and get any more competitive. Let's see what Mr. Charles thought. He was actually picking Tampa Bay to win, and we know at this point they have been victorious, so... Sometimes, Charles, when you're talking about sports, man, maybe we should start to listen, huh?
You know what? Maybe not, but I don't know. You have to do your own thing, but I can't tell a man what to do. If you like losing, though, keep doing what you do. Anyway. I don't know what else it takes. Championship, somebody asked you about the Super Bowl. Well, who's the champion of your league? Co-champion, what have you. Who won the Super Bowl? Who picked the Super Bowl? But, you know, you do what you do. Whatever you do. Whatever you feel comfortable with, I'm fine with. You like it, I love it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You're right, man. You're right. When you're right, you're right. I'm not going to say anything different, man. You're right. You had a very successful year with our picks in the Goon Squad. It's your choice in picking the Super Bowl winner, you know. But we still got March Madness coming, so we'll see what comes with that, my brother. We'll see what comes with that. Gentlemen, tonight we're going to be having a guest in a little. Guest coming on a little bit, but before the guest come, I want to throw a question out to you, if you guys don't mind. In a sense, is something that happened in your life, let's say in the past, that made you kind of change gears and do something different. And when you look back now, you're glad that you made the change. What would that be if I came to you first, Mr. DeMaurice?
The thing that really changed my life, and I had to put it in another gear, is the birth of my daughter, the birth of my first child, because I couldn't, because when I was single, I could do pretty much what I want when I wanted, and the only person that had to serve the consequences of that was me. And so when I knew I was going to be a dad, I had to kind of dial that back a lot, because I knew that any and everything that I did could possibly not only get consequences on my end, but it could hurt them or hurt my son and my daughter. I had a son later, but it would hurt my child. And so I had to really kind of rethink my steps and not take a lot of risk, and make sure that no matter what, that the child was taken care of. So I couldn't spend money frivolously. I couldn't spend money like, oh, I want to get this, and it just fly out and get it. I had to make sure, okay, is she cool? Cool, then I can maybe splurge and get something. But it was always them first. So that was a big change in my life that kind of made me kind of gear it down a little bit, and to not only just stop thinking about myself first, but thinking about my child first before I made decisions.
Okay. Mr. Charles, I'm going to come to you a little later on in the show, and I'll give my response as well to the same question. But this current moment, we want to welcome in a guest that was here about maybe 18 months ago. When I say this young lady rattled the meter, basically broke the meter. And Mr. Charles, Mr. DeBreeze has been asking me for a while, get her back on. But I wanted to bring her back on and really do something. So recently I read something that she wrote, and I was blown away. And I said, you know what, now's the time. I reached out, and she was graceful enough to join us. And I want to welcome Ty Shi back to When Black Men Talk. How you feeling?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back. How's everybody doing?
It's our pleasure. We're doing well. I can't speak for those two, so I'm going to stand back. Because when I told them that you was coming on, the first thing Mr. Charles said to me, are we going to be able to come on? So let me stand back and let them say what they got to say. Mr. Charles, Mr. Maurice, yes, how you doing?
All I know
Hello,
is I'm
gentlemen.
Better now.
How are you?
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. I'm better now.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm glad I made at least a little bit of an imprint that day that we spoke. So thank you.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't an imprint.
You changed my life.
It wasn't an imprint.
Oh, wow.
You opened my eyes to a whole lot of stuff. I'm bowing. You can't see me, but I'm bowing to you, sweetheart.
Glad to hear it. That's why I'm here. That's why I was born.
Oh, wow.
Amen.
I'm going to have you, if you don't mind. I gave it the name, and I'm assuming it's the proper name for it. My Love, Come Back to Bed. If you would please just read that for us so we get this started. Gentlemen, listen to us closely, because you might place yourself aside of it.
I'm going to go into the moment of when I wrote the piece. And so please understand the theatrics behind it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My love, come back to bed. It's still so warm in here, where our secrets reside beneath the sheets. Still remnants of our breath, our vigor, and our collapse. There are still traces and imprints of climax and spill, laughter and silence, cravings and surrender, loss of words and of the outside world. Unfiltered, unbothered, free and uninhibited, nothing prohibited, everything carnal and eager, famished with insatiable anguish, demanding and begging and pleading for more. And I am still inhaling the echoes of your moans in my mouth. I've decided to collect them for safekeeping. Oh, I'll be sure to revisit them when I suck and find my fingers tracing down my thighs, gently and slowly in between my legs, lips aching to part by you, waiting for you to come back to bed again.
Mr. Demers, Mr. Charles, we're going to give you each an opportunity. You know, I read this, and it's the first time you two are hearing it. So, Mr. Demers, your initial reaction, sir?
I went and got my robe and put that on, and I got a stiff drink. And I can't think of another way to spend a Valentine's listening to that. Wow. I'm about to grab a cigar and call it a night. That's it.
Thank you. God bless you. Good night. I'm getting my evening started now.
From one poet to another, that was beautiful. That was great work.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
I don't know where to start. I'm just going to say this. D. Maurice, now you know what I'm talking about when you know how you touch people's soul. She just touched your soul, brother. Some other thing. I've been trying to explain it. You had to go get the roll. But anyway, I digress. First of all, I am very glad that I was able to hear it instead of reading it, because there is something about the interaction, the emotion, the expression that you presented, and I want to thank you. And I'm hoping somewhere down the line you should teach a class, because we got a lot of people, females, that could use that talent to really touch other folks' souls. Because you touched my soul tonight, and I want to thank you. And I don't have my role, but thank you anyway.
Sir. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I think there's so much importance in every breath and every pause and every inflection, and to be as deliberate as you can possibly be, because otherwise they're just words on a paper, right? And words on paper doesn't necessarily make it poetry. So it's a combination of everything.
Actually, you haven't been here for a while, and I'm sure there's been other things that you've been doing or keeping yourself busy with. So bring us up to date, things that's been going on with it.
Whew, man, I mean, just COVID alone is a lot of a lot of transformation. The last time that I spoke to you all, I was in a dominant submissive relationship, and it was very, very fulfilling. And the culmination of that, as it ended, is that we were both there for each other for extremely powerful and beautiful lessons. He showed me what it is I want as a woman, as a partner, and how I need to be as a partner and as a woman, especially as an alpha female, and knowing when to submit to a man, no matter how dominant I am in nature, especially when I'm head of household. So it was a beautiful, beautiful lesson that we both realized that we weren't the ones that we wanted for each other, but we loved the experiences that we created. And so now we can take that forth with other people that we actually do truly want to be with. And I'm so grateful. It's been beautiful. And after that, because, I mean, breakups are definitely never easy, I had been called for years to do plant medicine and do ayahuasca. And I moved forward, and I wanted to train to serve medicine. So I'm a shaman, and I serve medicine from the Amazon jungle now. But before I could even get initiated to do that, I opted to do ayahuasca to see what lessons I needed to confront what kind of dark, deep traumas I needed to unravel from all the crevices within me and confront them finally and get rid of them for good so that I can step into my new mission of being a shamanic and healing guide. So I've been serving for over a year now. I've manifested a wonderful new larger healing center, and where I was at 600 square feet, I am now in 3,000 square feet, and so we'll be adding a whole bunch of new healing modalities to further expand the awakening of each person that walks through our doors. So I kind of took a step back from poetry and just kind of focused on the business and my healing and shamanic work. I do serve two different medicines now, one of which is a DMT medicine. So basically you get to experience your own death through this medicine. And that becomes an extremely life-changing, life-altering experience. And so people, especially during COVID, have been able to step into a new realm of possibilities for themselves where they feel essentially, quote-unquote, unfuckwittable. And these circumstances in the third dimension or this quote-unquote matrix no longer affects us. We're not a part of that world. We literally manifest and create our reality as we so choose. So one person at a time, whoever decides to come and sit in ceremony with me gets to have that experience. And now coming full circle, I'm much more confident, much more powerful and stronger in the way that I serve. I'm now hosting I'm a part of a healing retreat and bringing back poetry as well. So, and of course, anything that my spirit decides to experience, I'm going to allow it to do so. I'm not right now, because of everything that's happened with COVID, it's very difficult to meet anyone new. And of course, as I've decided to further my own journey and my own healing, I felt like I needed to fine tune some things and get rid of some old T spots, which I like to call trigger spots, right? They're T spots. We need to confront those, look at them and see, okay, I didn't know that I was still affected by that. Let me finally get rid of that for good this time. And now I can really attract and manifest someone who has also altered their life to delete all of that trauma as well, so we don't have to bring baggage into the next experience as lovers. So really enjoying singlehood right now, but even still being very attracted to my lifestyle in the BDSM realm, being attracted to women in the polyamorous lifestyle. So I'm very fluid. I love that there is more fluidity in my life as I'm stepping forward to possibly partnering up with more people. I also don't have a play partner anymore. I had a play partner for 4 years while I was with my dominant, and I finally severed ties with him because we were no longer in the same vibration. So it was just time to say goodbye. And now it's definitely happy to accept new energy that would match mine moving forward.
I'm grateful that that you set some time aside to spend with us, because I wanted to do something a little different that we probably haven't done in this show since we've been doing it, and that's understanding the sexual depth of a woman. And I couldn't think of anyone mm-hmm. to really bring on and tackle this with other than you, so I'm glad that you're giving us the opportunity. And the first thing I want to just kind of really walk into, because as men, we, you know, for the most part, men are visually stimulated, and that's kind of get our motors going and get us in the right direction when we're thinking about basically having sex. But for a woman, and that is going to sound like a simple question, but we don't hear this answer often, or we don't hear it at all. What drives women to sex?
I mean, most men who look and objectify women for a sexual tool could never grasp it. So I can understand and appreciate why you would even want to ask that question, because the same men that would objectify a woman as a sexual tool would never even have an inclination that she too desires to have sex, except that sex for us is desired in a different way. You know, a lot of times, depending on the vibration and the education and the expansion of that man, you know, what's commonly seen is that men get horny, they get a hard on, and they're eager to bust that nut. That's pretty much it. And it's like, oh, you're here. Cool. Hey, help me out kind of thing, right? And they unfortunately miss this beautiful experience of a deeper connection. And I can say this with my last play partner because he was so used to like, all right, yeah, I'm here. Hey, let's get it on. And I want to kind of take you into a little scenario that I did with him to teach him what this is like. And I said, I want you to turn on the TV and turn on the show that you want to watch. And I said, I need to be fed. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, just watch your show. And I said, don't look at me. Don't pay attention to what I'm doing. This is for me. This is not for you. And so I proceeded to give him head for at least maybe 30, 40 minutes. And every time he was about to come, I said, don't you dare, because this is not for you. This is for me. And I said, if you need to moan, moan, because you're going to help me keep going if you need to do so. But this is for me. And I need you to understand that this is not about the nut. This is about the experience. Shit. And it, of course, it was really hard for him to concentrate on the TV show, right? But I was listening to him. I was paying attention to his breath. I was paying attention to his heartbeat. I was paying attention to his toes when I was, because I would look at his body and I would see if his toes were curling, if his legs were jerking a little bit. And I say, no, you don't get to go there. You need to just keep holding it. Do you understand? And he would say, oh, okay, I don't know how much longer. I said, it's not your choice. It's mine. I said, do this for me and you'll get to do whatever you want after. And so I made him almost come at least maybe 10 times, but I never allowed him to come. For me, the actual experience of being able to smell him and taste him and watch his moves and him wanting to disobey what I asked him to do and still felt so vulnerable and so surrendered to what I was doing with my mouth that he wanted to break. And I got such sheer joy. And finally, you know, when I knew that he couldn't take anymore, I decided to engage and then let him take over. Of course, that didn't last too long the first time, but because it was so intense for him, we actually got to go 3 more rounds, which was for me in the end anyway. All that to say is that when you are able to give a woman the time, the pleasure, to give her what she needs to feel, to see, to taste, to touch, whether it's her pleasuring you or you pleasuring her, instead of feeling so rushed and always wanting to get to the nut, then you have her. She's yours. She'll do whatever you want. And to this day, even though he and I are not together, I still get calls from him. I just can't see myself with someone else. It's not the same thing. And I know that it wasn't. And it's not to boast, but it's because I allowed him to have a different type of experience where I'm like, no, you want to play with me? Okay, cool. But this is what I require. And he paid attention and he gave me exactly what I needed. And so usually, and we had seen each other for over 4 years. Usually he would go down on me and he would just be like, oh my God, my tongue is tired. You can't come yet. And can I just put it in? And I'm like, you know, and so we spent a couple of times where I just didn't even want to see him anymore. But after we started to get closer and closer and I gave him this experience, he gave me the most awesome head I have ever experienced besides one other person. But it was mind-blowing. Why? Because he actually paid attention. He actually paused. He actually took control. He wasn't in a rush to be like, all right, I'm going to rub your little clit. All right, yeah, your titties. Okay, I'm going to twist the nipple real quick. All right, boom, I'm going to put it in. He would have lost me. And he did several times because he didn't know. He lost me several times. So over the four-year period, we went through hiatus periods where I didn't want to see him at a time. And he would call and he'd be like, I need to see you. And I'm like, but we got to do this different. Otherwise, I'm not interested. And every time sex got better. And the only reason why we did part is because I did step into my spiritual journey and he refused. He was just like, nope, that's all mumbo jumbo. I don't care about that. It's all bullshit to me. And I'm like, okay, then unfortunately we're going to have to part ways because my spirit is pulling me in a different direction now. So if you could marry the two, if you could be spiritual and you could still be just as kinky and open with me, then we can make this work. And he refused. So I opted to step on, and go on by myself. But really, again, to answer your question, what it is that drives a woman to have sex is paying attention to her. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be sexual. It's asking her, how are you doing today? Give me your feet. Put them on my legs. Let me rub out your feet. You tired? How much water did you drink today? Are you dehydrated? Oh, did you eat yet? Let me fix you a salad. You know, here's a pillow. Let me prop it under you. All those little things are foreplay. You don't have to just suck on her clit to give her foreplay. Foreplay starts all week long. Or, from that morning on, it would be like you send her a text, it would be like, I'm thinking about you. You know, you send her flowers. You stop by and you drop off her favorite latte at work. Whatever. That's all foreplay. By the time you want to have sex with her, she's already dripping in her panties, already so turned on that she's ready to do whatever you want. Tap my knee, literally tap my knee. Hey, can I have some? Now, what part in that conversation told you I would be remotely interested in having sex? Thank God that relationship ended and I was able to go off and explore and really understand what it is my body needed, what it is that I craved. And as a poet, poetry is interwoven in all of my sexual escapades. And if there's none of that in there, it's like, why even bother? So, anyway, I'm sorry that was long-winded, but I hope that answered your question.
I loved every bit of it. You can keep going if you want to do that. We have no problem with that at all. Because that was, you said a lot that we need to hear. You said a lot that we need to hear. And here again, as men, sometimes we assume we know this and we act on what we assume and we don't know. So we need to take the time out and hear and really listen and understand. So no, you said what you need to say, and we suck it up like a sponge. The another question I want to ask is, because men don't tend to think about this, again, what does sex feel like to a woman?
What does it feel like? It feels amazing. If you're with the right person, I've been very blessed to have had a buffet of men. And I know that a lot of other people, especially people of a religious background, would be like, oh, she a hoe. No, it's not that. I wanted to experience. Because when I was with my husband, he was my first sexual experience. And then I was with him for 15 years. And I remember when I was with him, I couldn't get moist. I couldn't get wet for him towards the end of the marriage. And I was on the verge of going to the doctor, wanting to take some pills or something, or going to go see a healer because I thought there was something wrong with me. He made me feel like there was something wrong with me. So when I got out of my marriage, I was like, all right, let's see what's on the platter because I'm ready to taste everything on it. And so I had a few different experiences, and some were like, okay, now I know I don't like that, and nope, we'll never do that again. And then there was some that were fucking mind-blowing, right? And they're just like, I didn't know that this was possible because it was never possible in my marriage. So I will tell you that I remember that I've had long 2-3 hour conversations with someone, whether in person or on the phone, and being listened to and being and letting having someone let me know that I'm wanted and that they're attracted to me. God, you're so beautiful. And you know, I can't believe you just said that. Like, that's like, I'm paused because of how you just said that. And wait, let me process. And it's like, God, you're amazing. And the compliments open a woman up. It's like a flower, right? She's closed up, and then you just sprinkle some water, and she wants to open up a little bit, and then you sprinkle some more water, and then the petals start to open up. And then next conversation, we start talking. There's a little bit more sexual innuendo. There's a little bit more flirting. And then finally, you know, lo and behold, you have a pussy shot on your phone. Whoa, where did this come from? This is a nice surprise. And the reason why a woman can get there is because of that attention. So again, attention always creates that intention for her to want to be with you. And so by the time it's time for you to get into the sexual experience with her, and you, I'll tell you what is one of the most powerful experiences I recently had. I had a 3-hour conversation with someone that we were both very attracted to each other over the last 6 years. And he wouldn't touch me, but we would talk, and we were so in sync because he was listening to everything. He paid attention to my lips. He paid attention to my hair, how I was sitting. And be like, oh, I never noticed that before. That's beautiful. Oh, wow, you just bit your lip. That was sexy. And it's like, oh, my God, I was blushing, right? Meanwhile, lo and behold, I knew I was getting wet just in this conversation alone. Nothing sexual. It was just very light flirting. And so basically we went on for 3 hours, and I finally got, I was so heated sexually that I was just like, I'm gonna have to make the first move because he's not. And when I made the first move, he was ready. And so we started, you know, moving through the house, and he was leading me to the bedroom and everything. And he gave me head for an hour, but he wouldn't let me come. So he did to me what I did to my last play partner. By that time, and I'm not saying that it's head that does it. Don't misconstrue that. He could have not given me head, and I would have had the same reaction. So after he's giving me head, I said, please, I need you inside me. And he was like, you don't tell me what to do. I swear my whole body lit up on fire. He goes, are you telling me what to do? And I said, no, sir. And I immediately turned very submissive with him. And he says, okay, you're going to wait until I'm ready to give it to you. The fact that he has the patience, attention to me, to pleasure me, and for him not to be in a rush to enter me, in itself, the idea of that was arousing. I was soaking wet. So by the time this man or any other man that I have been with that has entered me and has been, that has had me in full pleasure mode, is because they took their time. So by the time they're inside, I'm ready to explode. There's not much else to do other than enjoy the ride and feel it, and then you can completely surrender. The woman will completely surrender because she's so wet, for one, that she's already enjoying. She's already in heat. Her pussy lips are already swollen. So all you have to do is just enter her with your thickness, your girth, and she's already just like practically ready to go. So if you take your time, again, I can't stress enough, take your time, talk to her, listen to her, breathe her in. She'll be ready to go, and sex with her will be that much more pleasurable for her. There are women that are barely wet at all, and and the guy tries to be, because he's so big or he's so thick, he tries to ram it in her and he tries to hit it really, really hard. He ends up hurting her, and she'll tell him that he's hurting her, and he won't listen because he's like, yeah, I'm killing the pussy, and he thinks that that's what she likes. No, you literally are killing the pussy, and she's not enjoying this anymore. And then she's sitting there doubled over in pain afterwards, and he falsely feels like he's some sort of king that just beat it up, and he's so far from the truth. So pay attention, and you will have exactly what you want from her, and she will enjoy it.
We're going to take a little turn with this next question, and it's based on woman being attracted to another woman. And based on your conversation and past conversations we had, that represents you. So what does another woman, or let's say, what does Ty She find attractive about another woman?
I would almost venture to say that I'm a wholehearted black man. I love thick women. I love thick asses. I love thick, breasts, small waist. I love thick legs. I love thick lips, very seductive eyes. For me, because I'm not very tall, I obviously love very petite women, but I love curves. So someone who's really bony or really small or too tall over me, because I am dominant when it comes to women, that's not something that attracts me. But if she's small and she has an air of submissive energy in her, I turn into a guy. And the dominant side of me really shows up, and the BDSM side shows up as well, where I want to completely dominate her, spank her, and I want to tie her up, tease her, deny her of an orgasm for a very long time until I make her explode, things of that nature. So aesthetically, that's what I like, and I love well-read, intelligent, conversationalist, basically. And I can honestly say, because I know that there are some women that like women because they want to please their man. No. I like women just like a man likes a woman. So I can honestly see, on a cent down the line, 50-50, I love men just like I love women. I can see myself as a woman. I can see myself marrying a woman. I can openly date a woman. If it's even in a three-way partnership or a four-way partnership, even better, because you get to enjoy the best of both worlds. But if it's just me one-on-one with a woman, she absolutely, absolutely turns me on.
This is something that people have said. I've heard this in different conversations when it comes to two women being together. What is the need of a strap-on? Because when people see that a woman, they tend to think if a woman's playing with a strap-on, why is she not being with a man?
Being with a woman is so multifaceted, because we've got the studs and we've got the femmes and we've got like the bestie that wants to get down every once in a while. I've been with women who absolutely don't want that type of experience. They're happy with just kissing, hugging, licking, sleeping together. The intimacy is what drives them to want to be together. There are women who love to be with women but miss the interaction of a man, so then they'll supplement, a strap-on to help in the experience. I feel that going back to our initial conversation about what drives a woman to want to have sex is like, you got to pay attention to her. What does she want? Listen to her breathing. Listen to her posture. See what it is that she needs, and half the time she may not even need a strap-on because she feels so fulfilled. Every once in a while, you want to throw it in, great. If that's something she constantly needs, then, this is when I say, hey, man, just bring a guy into the picture and then, have fun instead of, but that's me. That's just my experience. there are women that could never be with a man anymore, or could never be with a man, period. So, and then there are who have the very masculine role, and they desire to wear a strap-on because they like to feel like men, and it turns them on to be able to penetrate another woman because it makes them feel like men. So even though they may not be sexually stimulated in that, like in the genital area, they may not feel that full throttle of stimulation, they are still sexually stimulated because they're able to pleasure her. So it could, like, again, multifaceted. Every scenario is different. There are the girls that are just like, hey, you're my bestie. Hey, we're not dating. Cool, go down on me. Oh, cool, put on a strap on, you know, and it's for fun. But who do they really prefer to be with? At the end of the day, they prefer to be with men. So there are different women with different cravings, different desires, different types of women that they're attracted to. I don't like studs. It's just I'm too a masculine energy when it comes to women for me to want to be with a stud. I'm like, for me, I prefer men at that rate. I'm very feminine, but I still prefer feminine women.
How does a woman, because I'm sure you probably get hit on by women, how does a woman approach another woman compared to maybe a man approaching a woman?
I mean, if you're at a gay bar, it's very open. But if you're not in a situation where it's known that you're there for that reason, it's very subtle. It unfortunately, courtship between two women takes a lot longer because there's fear, there's worry about what the families will say or who will find out. Like the woman that I was seeing for 10 years, we were seeing each other, you know, secretly for 10 years. And we both were like, no, the kids can't find out. You know, our families can't find out. And then I came out first, and she was like, no, that's not who I can't. My family means too much to me, and this can't do that. Because I wanted to make it official with her. I'm like, I love you, and, you know, we've been seeing each other for 10 years. Let's make this a go. And she was like, I can't. So I opted to leave the situation with her because I really wanted more. But unfortunately, that secretive on the DL type of life is very, very rampant amongst women because of the fears, you know, whether it's religion or work or, you know, children, it holds us back. So it's subtle, but luckily I'm seeing a lot more polyamorous people. I'm seeing a lot more people involved in kink. More people from the LGBT community who are just more vocal about their desires, and they're tired of being confined in their societal boxes. So they're definitely more open to dating openly out in the open, and they don't care who sees them anymore. So I'm happy this evolution, but it's still not the easiest transaction to have with another person that is of your same sex.
Mm-hmm. Polyamorous, that's something we're going to save for another show. I'm going to get you to come back on maybe next month or so. We'll go deeper.
Okay.
In the meantime, yeah, we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, Mr. Charles, you've been quiet over there, sir, if you have a question.
Yeah, I've been quiet. I've been taking out a bunch of notes. I'm learning. I appreciate it. I'm on the right track. I've been, look, you know, you don't talk about men to this, about men, about things about this, but I appreciate for you definitely securing and letting certain men know that they're on the right track, because there are a lot of men that are missing out. They think they're studs, or they think they are totally controlling the situation from that standpoint. And that's crazy. So I have a question. This is just something bizarre, if you can connect with it.
Okay.
If a woman is, I don't want to use the word, but let's say a woman likes men and women, right?
Uh-huh.
So they like both men and women. And they don't let anybody know. They wanted to really have both of their opportunities with men and women. I guess my question is, do you ever think that there's a time where a woman can keep a man, as you mentioned, at bay, where they may not have a sexual connection, they may not have sex, but it's kind of like she always keeps him around, like keep him in a, like break glass in class in case of emergency, where it's almost like a boy toy where she can show him off, she can do some different things with him, but she knows she has that ability, even though he wants her, desires her in such a manner. Sorry that was so long.
No, that's okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, if it's an agreed upon thing, then it works out, right? Because she can keep him for show. Meanwhile, she's indulging sexually the way she really, really wants, right? If she desires not to have sex with him. In the end, that's not going to end very well, because if he desires to have sex with her and she doesn't want to have sex with him, then obviously that's not going to last for too long. But like my ex-partner, she would always say, you know, she was very dual in her energy. So whenever she was into women, she would call me and we would see each other, and she would be like, I don't want you to see other women. She was very possessive in a way. And then when she was flipping and going back into men, it's like we really didn't see each other during that period. So she's very much attracted to women, very much into like lesbian porn and stuff like that. But she has a steady boyfriend. They look like they're about to get married. Her and I are still connected, but we don't see each other in that capacity anymore. So yeah, for sure, that is something that a lot of women would do. I just feel like, you know, break all the lines and just do what you want. You know, you can, a man, it's very rare. And I have experienced this with insecure men that didn't like me being with women, because they felt that they couldn't compete with that. And they couldn't grasp that it's like, no, I genuinely like the feel of a woman, not because she could replace you, but because I like the experience, right? It's like you have chocolate and vanilla, and you're like, I feel like having vanilla ice cream today, and then you switch up, and I want some chocolate, and maybe I even want some mint in there. You don't have to explain why you like it. You just fucking like it, right? And a lot of men get too insecure and in their head and don't want to accept that a woman can actually be that, you know, just neutral between both desires for men and women. And on the flip side too, when a woman wants to bring a man into the situation and she's very insecure, and this happened to me too when I was first exploring threesomes and things like that, I did it for him, but I also did it for me. But then when she would pay a little bit more attention to him, I would get really insecure. And so, I know that's a whole nother show that we could definitely talk about. But, you know, again, paying attention that all parties are being paid attention to equally. Everyone feels the same amount of energy. And I know that that's hard sometimes when you're in the heat of the moment. But it is very important and very crucial if you want to have more than one person in your bed. So, yeah, I mean, it really depends on how open you can evolve into being free with what you want, what you desire, and actually being vocal about it, which I'm hoping to teach a lot of people to do as they evolve. Even with my medicine clients, we talk about sex, and I'm like, open up. You want your freedom? Open up for what you like. Speak on what your desires are. You don't have to hide and pretend that this is the type of shit you're into. Be into it, and then whoever is supposed to like what you like will show up, period.
You would definitely delve into the insecurity part, because I can imagine that plays into the polyamorous part. Mr. DeMaurice, come on, man. I'm sure you have something percolating in that mind of yours, sir.
Oh, definitely. I'm very intrigued with the healing, and I'm glad that you've taken the steps to become a shaman. I've often thought about doing that and going through the healing process and facing fears and demons and things of that sort. But my question is a question I get a lot with poetry. Is the different pieces that you write, because I write erotic poetry myself, are you thinking of someone? Are you is it something that you may be thinking of someone that you want to be with and you haven't been with them yet, but you're imagining what it would be like? So kind of take us through the poetry and when you're writing those different pieces, your mindset, and is it about someone or is it you're creating a situation about someone?
You know, I think if we can aim to, and I know that not everyone's had this experience, but if we can kind of look at life through the lenses of a psychedelic experience, we could write poetry all the time. Because everything is vivid. The colors.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
Yes. So the colors, the senses, the way your skin feels, even when you're touching yourself, you touch your hair, or you touch a rock, or you run your fingers through the grass. I mean, everything is just so heightened. So for me, when I write poetry, it could be because I just left his house and it was so incredible that I needed to write immediately. It could be that I walk by someone and I get a whiff of a scent and I'm like, oh my God, I need to write this now.
Yeah.
A lot of times it'll be that I'm scrolling online and I'll see this beautiful picture. The piece that I did at the beginning or the top of the show was a picture I found. And I just loved her posture, just laying on the bed, and you could tell she was waiting. And I remember what that felt like, you know, you just had like beautiful, rough, hot, and heavy sex, and you're depleted and you're tired and you probably went to the bathroom or whatever, and you just can't wait for him to come back to bed. I remember that vividly. So anything could prompt me to write. It depends on how passionate you are about your everyday living that can inspire you to write at any moment. Anything can, it could be someone's voice. I've had conversations with people, like with men who have very deep voices, and I have that, you know, as soon as their voice can vibrate at the base of my spine, I'm just like, I need to write about his voice. And of course, I use all metaphors. People don't know that I'm actually writing about someone's voice, but it is. I touched a piece of papyrus paper one time, and I was so enamored with how there's like a cross-stitching of the paper before it's like glued down and mashed together. And I was like, how beautiful that someone actually took the time to weave the paper and then, you know, flatten it enough for us to be able to take a pen to write to it. And that actually turned into a piece. It depends on the lenses that you look at life through that can create anything for you to write with. If you're just thinking like, yeah, I'm going to write about some sex. And then it sounds like you're trying too hard. But if you allow yourself to live vividly, then that's exactly how you'll write too.
Yeah. Because I get sometimes people say, well, write a poem about me. And it's like, no, it's not that easy. And it's like one of the most frustrating questions you can get.
Inspire me. Do
yeah,
some magical
exactly.
shit. I promise you it won't be difficult to write about you. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So, Ashi, what can we say other than a big thank you for coming on? And we look forward
Absolutely.
To having you back
thank
on
you
real
for
soon.
Having me.
Yeah. Oh, no. The doors is always open. Trust me. Always, always open. And here again, we'll get you back on next month and we'll go a little deeper. And that, the poem, Emerson, I don't think a lot of people are ready for it, but we're going to make them ready for it when you come back. That's for sure. So thanks again, Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles. You all want to see your thank yous and we'll turn the tide a little bit.
Hey, I'm still bowing. I haven't stopped bowing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Always an honor. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Definitely a pleasure. We'll hopefully hear from you again very soon. And this is great stimulation for other things. So thank you very much.
Yes, I'm all ears for new ideas and new possibilities. So I'm here. Thank you. And thank you again for inviting me back on.
Well, you're more than welcome. I'll be in touch. Have a good evening.
You too.
Gentlemen, take a look. You're welcome. I'm going to take a little break and we'll come back and turn the tide a little bit. Hard to follow that, Mr. Charles. We're going to try, man. I asked a question earlier about something you may have been doing or want to do, and you had to change and do something different. And thank you for being patient and allowing me to come back to you. But I must say, man, it's something to have a conversation with the opposite sex where they're so open, and they're so open, and they speak freely and not afraid to speak freely, because to me, those are the best conversations. Sometimes you talk to people and they're running, avoiding, trying to hide certain things, thinking you're going to be judged or whatever. And when she's here, or when I'm in communications with her, it's just so open and so refreshing. And to me, I've always kind of gained something when I had a chance to communicate with her. But back to you, Mr. Charles, something that basically you had to change gears to do that. Maybe at the time you love, but what was the change that took place in your life, sir?
I think switching, and that's hard. You're right. That is hard to come off of, to kind of bring it back down, but we're going to figure it out. I think that I had a chance where I was almost kind of like forced to change occupation. I'd done something for so long, and I loved it, and it was, I was a sports writer for a very long time. And then I was able to really, if you will, hit the top or the pinnacle of the career. I achieved really what I wanted to, and I even actually prayed on it. And I didn't think it would happen so quickly. But that opportunity, the way in that such a manner, it changed. It changed. So I had to move on to do something else. And I was quite nervous about the change because I didn't know. I knew I was qualified to make the change because I had prepared for it, but I was nervous about it, and I was unsure. But I made the change, and within, I would probably say a month, my phone rang, and a friend of mine called me and told me about an opportunity that was evolving right into the second part or the second occupation that I wanted to dive into. And they were literally ramping up the interview process, but I was able to get an interview. I got the job, and I worked at it for years, and it allowed me to change my life. But initially, I was scared. I was nervous because this is something I had done before, the first job, and I knew I was good at it. Wasn't so certain about the second part of it, but that allowed me to evolve and allowed me to evolve to where I need to be and where I'm at right now. And if I had not done that before, who knows what I would have been doing. I probably would have been that old sports writer guy with those funny plaid jackets, writing sports for 45 years. Anyway, those guys, you see them on TV or whatever.
They went, oh, yeah.
I've been here for 47 years. Wait a minute, Bob. Hey, Bob. Hey. Everybody's kind of like, just let Bob go off in the corner long as he don't kill himself or Bob blow nothing up. Bob can keep coming to the game. So I didn't want him to become that guy.
I can see those old pictures. Interesting, man, that years ago my love of a career and what I really wanted to do was to, of course, be on radio. I had a chance to experience that early in my life. And I chose to step away. And I know this is funny because I remember a couple of times you were asked, man, what made you stop? And just working it in my early 20s, I was thankful that I was able to basically be in it, enjoyed it, and some of the trimmings that came with it, enjoy those too. But there was the time when I started looking around some cats that were much older than me. And I saw the way they were living. They didn't really have security within the work itself. And I didn't want to end up that way. I knew at that point, I was like, you know what? I can't see my hanging around this, enjoying it for many years, but growing old and not really being prepared to be at that stage in my life. And it's interesting because that's what kind of pulled me out of it. And I came across a gentleman that I worked with years ago, and I ran into him, I think it was last year, and he works for Sirius Radio. He's worked at some different stations from time to time throughout his career, but currently at Sirius Radio. And he said to me, man, they don't pay any money. And when he said that to me, I always knew I made the right decision, but that kind of put the stamp on it for me. Because a lot of times in black radio, they just aren't paying the folks. They just aren't paying them. If your name ain't huge and you're probably not doing syndication, you're barely making it, bro. You're barely getting by. So, you know, I'm thankful that at that time I was smart enough to know this is just not what I want to be doing. I mean, it was fun while it lasted, and I'm glad that opportunity, but I'm glad I took a chance to step back and say, nah, I got to move in a different direction. Even at that time, I didn't even know what the direction would be. I had no idea what direction I would go in, but I knew that I had to get out of. I had to do something different and really start to prepare for the future. And that's when things kind of changed. And I, you know, I've been saying this to myself for a while. I've really been saying it recently. If I stayed at radio, I cannot play the garbage that's in radio now. Bro. I'm just one of those cats, man.
No, I couldn't
play it, man. I listen to radio sometimes now, and I'm like, I don't know how these announcers talk this garbage up, man. And I couldn't do it. I mean, I had a chance when I was in radio years ago to play country music. And
yeah, me too.
I didn't. Yes, for a second, I didn't even say it twice because I knew I could not go in every day and hear that wang, wang. I just couldn't do it. I'm not knocking country music, but I knew it wasn't for me. So I look at, what do you want to call today's music? I don't know what they call it, R&B anymore, whatever they call it, man. But it is so simplified from the writing to the recording. And I'm amazed that, you know, people that know better don't say anything. They just tolerate it because, of course, they're trying to pick up a paycheck, but I couldn't do that. And I know if I hung around, if I hung around and I was in that arena, I'd have got fired several times because I would not be able to bite my tongue. I want to use the word courage a little bit, and that's something we don't hear about too much anymore. The word courage sometimes is very, very seldom used. It's strength in the face of pain or grief, mental or moral strength to venture. Persevere, withstand fear and difficulty. Damn, that says a lot. And you think something like that would reside in us on a daily basis, and we see it all the time. But in a sense, I don't see it that often. I'm just speaking for what I've noticed. I don't really see it that often. So I'll come to you, Mr. Charles, and ask this in a sense. Is courage something that's kind of bestowed upon you, or is it something that you develop over a period of time, or is it something that you just basically may never get?
Wow, that's a lot. I don't think it's bestowed upon you. I don't think it's not like the Wizard of Oz. you can't have the wizard come and just give you courage. It's something that you have to earn and you have to persevere for, because as much as I would like to, or somebody else would like to, a person deals with a situation or situations on their own. And you can't magically give them courage and guide them. You can talk to them. You can cite things. You can encourage them. But at some point, they're going to have to face that challenge. And that's why I believe that courage is not bestowed upon you. Because for as much as I want to bestow courage upon you, when you stand on your own and at that point of reckoning, if you will, the other person that's encouraging you cannot be there and cannot fight for you. And I think that's something that you have to develop or earn on your own. And I do think for some people, unfortunately, if they're not ready for it or they don't believe that they can do anything, some people never, as you said, have the ability to obtain courage.
I see courage, an absence of courage, as being stress. Because a lot of times people say, I'm stressed and this and that. And sometimes you just need courage to deal with what you're facing, what you're going through. But it seems like we're so quick to flip that switch and go, I'm stressed, I got this happening, and not choose courage. Does that make sense to you, Mr. DeMarais?
Yeah, I can see that. And that's just a lack of people wanting, really kind of facing what the task at hand is. And I see a number of courageous people, and man, our parents are courageous. Going through this society, knowing what society was going to do to kind of beat them down and keep them from being what they needed to be to struggle for their families, and just having the courage to get up and go to work every day, knowing that, you know, you're barely making ends meet, but you're still going out there doing whatever you need to do to do it. You know, I can't understand why people are saying they're stressed now when I've seen folks who had less and had less to work with who was able to get it done. And so that's when I look at courage, I tend not to look at, you know, the big heroes that you see in the movies and all that other stuff. I think of everyday people who are out there struggling, knowing that their life can end just going out there to the bus stop or to the train, or going, you know, through neighborhoods that, you know, are dangerous neighborhoods, and going out there risking it to just do what they need to do to get to work and to put in, you know, honest day work or two jobs just to make sure that their family eats. That's courageous to me. That's courage, because all the odds are against you. And despite that, you're still going out there trying to do it. You're mustering the energy and the strength and the faith to go out there and doing it, going out there and fighting for things that you know that's right, regardless of whether or not you make it back home or not. That's courage. That's courage. So I don't understand when people go, yeah, I'm stressed. Yeah, we all get stressed at some particular time, but is this going to stop you from doing what you need to do to survive? That's the question. Are you going to, you know, man up or woman up to do it when it needs to get done? And so I tend to look at courage in that respect from people, and not the overarching courage and what we think of, you know, in the movies and television and mass media.
I agree with you head on there, man. You're right, because people sometimes, and now I said this before, I think they throw that word hero around a lot. When necessary, it doesn't apply. But yeah, the courage to do what you have to do, man. It's what it is. And I like how you kind of went back to the generations before us. And, you know, in a simple way, simple way, they would have a lot of kids, man, not knowing how their kids going to get fed, but just knew it was going to happen, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They just knew by what they was going to do, whatever necessary, to make sure things work out. And we tend now to sit around and think and plot and plan. And again, courage is, to me, a symbol of, not a symbol, but it's kind of like a subsidiary of faith. When you kind of basically weaken your courage, how much faith do you have? So if your faith is strong, your courage should be there. Now, I'm going to kind of throw this out to you, Ms. DeMarais, and it may be a fair question or it may not be one that's fair. But when we stand back and look at the two sexes, male and female, just in general, who tends to honor courage more, man or woman?
I think women do. Hands down, easy answer. And I've always thought that, and I thought that even more. I think I was discussing this with Mr. Charles offline. I'm teaching a women in social work course, and we have to go through a lot of different things that happen globally to women and what they have to go through and how they're still being oppressed and discriminated against and treated as not even second-class citizens. And to go through that and be able to take care of children, to be able to stand up and do what you need to do, men couldn't do that, man. Men couldn't do that, man. We're a bunch of whiners and You know, we catch a cold, we're in bed for a week. But, you know, I've seen the women in my life. I've seen the women in my profession. I've seen women do extraordinary things that, and put their lives on the line and do some incredible things that, of course, men do that too in wars and all that other stuff. But sometimes women are out there without any guns out there forging, you know, the way and without weapons, without kind of, you know, all the weaponry that men need to do this. And so look at Abrams down in Georgia. Georgia is one of the most racist states in the United States. And she was like, you know what, we got to get this done. You know, we got to do this. We got to do this. And she's not thinking about just herself, but she's thinking about future generations. So hands down, women all day, every day. All the stuff that, man, I can tell you so many things that over the years that I've learned and teaching this course and teaching some of the students, even some of the women in the course are like, oh, my God, I didn't know this was happening around the world. Oh, my God. And so it look at the different movements that are happening, and this is a travesty, too. The different movements, a lot of them were started by women, but they never got the credit. They never got the credit. I'm reading some religious texts that are not in the Bible, where there were women who stepped up and were doing the work, but they were stricken out of the religious text that we're reading because the men wanted to look good. They wanted to look like they were the forerunners of this, and it was more so women doing it than men. So I encourage definitely women, try to get a man to go through childbirth. I know I couldn't do it.
You're right on with this one, man. You're right on because I'm going to give you 300% that they are, man. Man, I there's a lot of times, man, I'm disappointed with us as men. A lot of times. And this is one of the areas right here, bro. Square up. You know, we don't show courage in a lot of different areas, man. We allow women to step up and do things. And like you said about Stacey, man. I remember she was running for governor. We talked about her back then. And if you really want to understand her, go back to her childhood. This young lady, when she was 18 years old, wrote out what she wanted to do in her life and been following it by script. But you look at when she lost the governorship in Georgia, how she could have basically went and sat down and be like, no, like you said, the state of Georgia is known for what it's known for. And she tackled on head on. And I don't care what anybody says. She brought the election to Biden and Kamala Harris. She gave it to them. And if you look at the states that she helped turn, and I said this a while before too, when 4 years ago, there was 650,000 black people in the state of Georgia not even registered to vote. 650,000. She got over 1 million. Registered in Georgia. Think about that for a second. You could barely get two black people to do the same thing at one time, bro. To convince them. And this lady on her own, for the most part, I'm giving her, she had some help, but on her own, spearheaded and got it done. So, yeah, and that takes extreme courage. But again, that's extreme faith. She knew it was possible. She was determined. And that's something when I look at a lot of men, we're just happy to kind of just get along. We can get along, get high, moan and groan and complain. They ain't a man to me, bro. They ain't a man. So, you know, I can, you know, back what you're saying 100% because they are basically outshowing us and probably been outshowing us for an entire lifetime. But as you said, they don't get the recognition that they deserve or they needed to be received. Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
Definitely. I agree with that in regards to women as well. We've seen in history where women know that because of, you know, their particular gender or their sex, that they couldn't get things done. So they had to pump up a man to put him in position to go forth with their ideas, knowing that the recognition totally would not be there. But I also would say, as we look at history, to me, one of the glaring examples of this totally is when you think about the Underground Railroad, the first thing that comes to your mind is Harriet Tubman. You don't even hear about another man that was, this guy was doing this, this guy was doing that, Harriet Tubman, and how she refused to stop People even consider her to be crazy or somewhat off because she continued to risk her life to go back and to do what she knew in her soul and her heart she had to do to continue to free people, and some of them that she didn't even know. So when you think about that, that is the true essence of, we think about courage and power, and specifically when it focuses on and features a woman.
Yeah, without a doubt. Gentlemen, if you two have some questions you want to throw in before we kind of get out of here, we'll take them. Mr. Charles, I'll come back to you first, sir, if you have something you'd like to ask.
Yeah, just curious, out of this situation, and like I said, it doesn't matter one way or the other, but I want to get your opinion. We heard early on about the impeachment of 45. And how we were, so many people were certain that he was going to jail and things and whatnot. And now that things are kind of, the dust was had settled, how do you feel about the results? Or what are you thinking now, since now things have been unraveled?
I think the Democrats sometimes chase the ass for no reason, bro. I'll be honest with you. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, you could say he incited whatever happened in the Capitol. I didn't think they was going to get impeached on that. And I realize in this country, based on what he did for the last 4 years, a lot of people hate him, right or wrong. You know, I'm not going to say whatever it is, but they hate him. But when you do anything, you must get your ducks in a row, do your homework, and get it done correctly. And the way they tried twice to impeach him and get it done, because you didn't have your ducks in a row. And what the Democrats, to me, don't want to realize and fail, he would have never been in office if they didn't promise Hillary Clinton the White House and felt like she was owed to her. Because 46 million people chose not to vote because they didn't want to vote for that bitch. 46 million. They voted this time around. They're running around scared now. They don't want him to run again 4 years. Let that motherfucker run in 4 years if he wants to. He's going to lose again. He doesn't have enough votes to go back in. So, to me, you're better off shooting to some other things. I'm not surprised. But not only Democrats, just people that are mad at him, they want some type of, to get him, put him in jail. If you can, you can. But if you're going to do it properly and get it done. Because you look foolish. Absolutely foolish when you do all this and you come across losing. It's just like the feds most of the times. They ain't bringing a case against you unless they know you got you, bro. If they got to take 5 years to get you, 10 years, once they come to your door and knock down your door, they got you. They got you. So stop doing it half-assed. If you're going to do it, you're going to put them in jail? Go ahead. If not, stop talking about it. The man is out of the White House. He's out. Your response to the DeMarais?
I looked at it a little bit differently, and because I watched a lot of it and kind of studied it, and I thought about doing pre-law in college, and I wish I could have. But I think getting him impeached would have been the cherry on the top, but I don't think that was the overarching goal of what they were doing, because the evidence they were presenting, and the sister from the Virgin Islands, the senator from the Virgin Islands was masterful in the team that the Democrats put together, because they offered a lot of different evidence that was basically setting 45 up for future litigation, future court cases, civil cases, criminal cases. And so, and I started to realize that when that sister from the Virgin Islands presented her case, and she got to the brink of calling out that the previous, I don't even want to call him, I rarely call him president, but the previous occupant of the White House, that he was in on the conspiracy, and she stopped short. It was almost like she was giving all this evidence from the FBI and all the evidence that they gathered about how he was in on this whole thing. He knew about it, and the people that were sitting in that very room were in on it, and she stopped short. And so I can see Georgia, I can see Michigan, I can see New York,
I can see a whole lot. It is a sister in Georgia right now putting her case together for what that idiot did in calling, trying to get a certain amount of votes, and got him cold on the phone. So I don't think the overarching goal was to get him impeached, because I think they already knew going in that they didn't have the 17 votes, because for whatever reason, whether it's demonic reasons why they're holding on to this guy or they think they're holding on to power, I don't think that was the overarching goal. I think the overarching goal was to expose the Republican Party and who they are, and actually to fracture and split the Republican Party, so the Democrats will probably have the White House for the next 20 to 24 years. Because once you expose it to the world, to the American people, and you still see the travesty that happens, a lot of people are waking up saying, okay, a lot of the old white guys that are in our country are not being progressive enough to move us forward, and they're stuck on this. So it's moving to get them out of office, because that's what's holding up this particular country. You think about the trend of this country. The Republicans screw it up, the Democrats come and clean it up. And I think people are tired of that back and forth kind of thing. And I think a lot of people I talk to have seen that, going, you know, Republicans kind of just mess things up. We saw it with Obama. We saw it with Jimmy Carter. We saw it with every Democratic president. We saw it with Bill Clinton, where the Republicans will mess it up and the Democrats come and clean it up and push the country forward. So I think people are starting to really kind of figure that out. And I think what the team did with the Democrats, a lot of these progressive Democrats that we have now, are they put it on showcase to expose it, to really kind of put it out there, so that the Republicans will be so fractured that they won't be able to get it together for another 20 to 24 years.
I hope you're right about that. I'm not going to say I see that, though. I just thought, knowing going in, you needed 17 Republicans to change their vote. It wasn't going to happen, bro. I'll say one thing about them: they're loyal. If they're loyal to stupidity, whatever it is, they're loyal to it. And that's what it comes down to. They don't like him, but they're not jumping ship. They don't want to be the one that jumps ship. So they're trying to maintain their base. Your response, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I think what DeMarie said, I can see where that's going. But I think the majority of the people that are watching have no idea what's going on there. They have no idea. All they saw was what they thought was going to be on the surface, and even some of the people that were working the case of trying to make it happen, talking about trying the impeachment, I'm not sure they're that deep with it. And if that works and it happens, I think that they will have reached their goal. But on the surface, for a lot of people, if nothing changed or they went after 45, then a lot of people are going to see it as a failure. And I'm glad you shared that, because it's another way of thinking, even some things that perhaps I didn't even really think about it that deeply. And it could have longer ramifications, but it just will be interesting, because I think people in general, we're so sometimes clueless and don't have the information that we need to really understand what the true goal is. So that was quite interesting. Appreciate that.
Can I jump in and say two more things that I saw? That this is the epitome of white privilege. And we saw it during the Capitol in January 6th, and we see it now. This is the epitome of white privilege. And so people are actually seeing that, you mean he can do all this stuff and still get off? This is wrong. The other thing is that the reason why they could not vote him guilty, because they're all guilty. They're all guilty because they vote him, and what he did, he starts exposing all those senators who are, you know, riding his rod, and they're all guilty, and this destroys the party. So that's why you see them now trying to run to try to form a party and unify it where it can't be done, because a lot of those Republicans that voted for him don't want him in, and it's going to split that party. Because nobody, you're right, Mark. Nobody's going to vote for this dude if he goes for 4 years. But he ain't going to make it for 4 years, because he may be in a jail cell or be so stressed to say, you know what, I can't run because I don't want this smoke no more. Because he's going to get a lot of smoke if we run next time. And at 78.
Question, can I throw one thing in here? Can I throw one
other thing? Mr. Charles. Yep. Yes, sir.
I think the sadness of it, though, for me is the buildup as if this was going to happen in regards to the impeachment, as if they were going to get that done and they're going to take them down. A lot of the common folk bought into that. And now I don't have anything to hold on to. I think that's really the sad part of it. I think that's why it's important, as you mentioned, DeMarie, to really explain the deepness and maybe the true deeper goal. Because a lot of people thought it was going to happen. They were all excited that this was going to happen. They were going to take, oh, Trump is going to jail. I don't know how many times I heard that over and over and over. And I'm like, really?
Not
and that's
this.
The point
the
I want to
Not to impeach him. Impeachment's
no,
not going to put you in jail.
No, but see, but that's what they think, bro. For the person that's outside of the loop that don't understand the 17 not voting, all they want to see is harm come to him. They're not paying attention to the central parts of what's going on. They want to see harm. So my point is, and if you can't get him and harm him, this impeachment should never even try, knowing that you were probably not going to get 17 people to switch over. Why waste the time and give the effect that you lost? You went for him and you lost. Go get him when you can get him. I mean, throwing out all this evidence, all that is beautiful. But if it doesn't turn into something that you're trying to get him on, it's a waste of time. And what's going to happen is eventually if you can't keep getting him or get him, you're going to lose momentum. People are going to start to lose interest. And now you have the interest of people wanting him to basically pay the price. Make him pay a price when you know you can. They knew they could not make him get him impeached. They knew. They knew starting it off. So don't act. I'm just going to say this. Don't act like the Democrats are all about us and all about right, because they're not either. They're not. So anytime they can throw a stain on Republicans and vice versa, that's what they do. It's all a dog and pony show. All of it is. So that's part of the reason I'm going to watch and get wrapped up into it, because it's a dog and pony show. DeMarie Twenty got like 2 minutes left, so I don't know if you want to jump in with a real quick, short question, or if you want to make a statement about something, man, you can run with that, sir.
No, I was just thinking, man, we could have ended that show right after she went off the air, because that was my mouthful right there.
I agree with you, man.
Related. Damn. You could have said, all right, good night, God bless. It's like Russell Williams, Russell Simmons. Well, man. I don't know what we got to do to keep her on this show, but we got to do it. Talk about real.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Oh, my goodness. Let me go take a shower.
I'm with you. like I said earlier, there aren't many people, you know, that you can really just put a question to, and they just give it to you. And they give you more than what you're probably seeking. But at the same time, give you a form of education. And that's what, you know, I love about her. When she comes on, she gives you all of that. And she's not afraid to. And fearless about you judging her. Can care less. If you don't, and she may not be for everyone. But that doesn't stop her. Gentlemen, we're going to wind this down and move on. Next week, we'll get together and do it again. Of course, it's Mr. Charles, it's Mr. DeMarie, it's Mark Elliott. We appreciate you giving us a listen to either on Spotify or Google Podcasts. We're going to continue to do this and get stronger and get better. That's the hope. That's the wish. Guys, stay safe. And if you can, stay black.